Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on major pro wrestling and MMA promotions, the occasional history lesson, and interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap.
All right, it is Wednesday, January 25th, 2012. I am Mike Sempervivia. I'd like to welcome you to Ringside Wrap here on Blog Talk Radio, courtesy of the mighty GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Of course, we have our own site now, just set up for the site itself, ringsidewrap.com, and you can also go to gwhnews.com to check out all the latest news and events happening around. And again, I am Mike Sempervivi, and joining us very shortly here is going to be Les Thatcher. And I tell you, we're going to have a guest on tonight, and producer Rich Tate and I, now he's just producer Rich Tate hiding behind the scenes, we're talking before the show on our guest tonight and what he actually means to the show. And I'm thinking Jose Oquendo is the right way to go. And for those who may be a little young out there, they don't remember Jose Oquendo. He was a baseball player for a couple teams, but most notably for the St. Louis Cardinals, and played throughout the 80s. And he was best known for being, I believe it was, the first guy to actually play. He wasn't the first, it was definitely only the second, and it hadn't happened for a long, long time. He was the only professional Major League Baseball player to play all nine positions in one game. And from what I've heard, our guest, he's got plenty of positions. And some of them, well, I won't even go there. But Brutal Bob Evans from Ring of Honor is going to be on with us at about 8:30 or so. And he's a great friend of the show and, again, a great, great utility man as well. And, you know, as waiting for Les to come on here, I know he's not going to be pleased with the first topic of conversation
Why are you waiting on Les?
Well, that because producer Rich Tate didn't give me the cue that you were on.
I've been sitting here listening to this whole thing, and maybe you can liken Bob to the Kama Sutra.
Yeah, I caught myself going in that direction, and I just figured, you know what, discretion's the better part of valor.
Well, that's that's positive, and I'm about positive.
By the way, hey, I just want to say thanks for throwing me under the bus, man. I've been sitting here typing, Les is on.
No, it's...
Read your screen, man. Read your screen.
I thought, hell, if you don't get to me by 9:45, I'll just hang up. Hell, I...
That's dedicated.
The fact that I actually do this nationally on Sirius and XM, no one would ever believe that, listening to the last 3 weeks of this show and me trying to kick it off. I don't know. I swear, Rich in the production studio just is intimidating me greatly. Oh, Lassen, forget about that. How are you?
It's kind of like Vince in your ear, right?
That's it.
Yeah, I know. I understand.
That's low.
I understand. Well, I want to kick us off with some positive. Two good football games last Sunday. I'd like to see Tom Brady win his fourth Super Bowl. Whether he will or not, I don't know. And we don't have any snow. And now I've done with the positive thing. What do you want to talk about for the next 2 hours?
Well, I'm going to throw in one more thing positive, which is happy birthday to PJ Whitmer.
Really? But, oh, yes. Well, I sent him an email on Facebook. Happy birthday!
That's it. Well, let's get it out of the way now. And Raw Monday night, it wasn't possibly. It was the worst acting you could possibly get. I hated this show. I hated this show in a lot of different ways. I hated this show most of all because of it was the last one leading into the Royal Rumble. And outside of Dolph Ziggler laying out CM Punk at the end, I didn't like any of it. And the problem was CM Punk laying out, Dolph Ziggler laying out CM Punk at the end came right after CM Punk laid out Johnny Ace, which, again, it was a mind-bending show. I don't know which piece of hilarity, Les, you would want to start off with, whether it be Cena and Eve's bad acting and that mess with Zack Ryder and Kane or what part of it, but it was not good. It was not good.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things I could think of in terms of Eve Torres acting would not be one of those. I think she's really the hottest girl on the show, but her and Zach are in love and they've known each other 15 minutes and they sat in a car and he tried to change a tire once. And so obviously they've bonded for life. It was just hokey, but you know, the thing about all of it, I tell kids, and I know every kid watches his own matches. If you never watch anybody else, he watches his own. And I always tell the kids, while you're having climaxes over that cool spot that you did or over this or that, the other thing, now back the tape up and turn the volume up, listen to the match and don't watch yourself, watch the audience. And if that cool spot in the history of the world gets no verbal or physical reaction from the audience, then it was not even worth doing. And when they said that Laurinaitis was going to wrestle Punk, the reaction was come see, come saw. The thing with Miz and Ronnie Killings was who nobody cared. They'll probably have Ziggler probably pin Punk 15 more times, probably in a convenience store someplace down the road this week, trying to get him over. They've already, and it's not going to work. Probably the only positive is Zack Ryder now is what I've said he should have been all along, just a major underdog. But that whole hospital broken back, how will he be back next week from that? I mean, are we going to have a medicine man or a magician?
That situation reminded me, Mike Tyson had a fight on Showtime and was being interviewed by Jim Gray afterwards. And Jim Gray asked him about his performance, and Mike Tyson said, I broke my back. And Jim Gray went, what? And he said, my back is broken. And Jim Gray, what happened? My back. Well, what is it, Mike? It's spinal. It's like, for some reason, I thought of that. It's like, so Zack Ryder's got a broken back. That's the realistic thing you decided to do.
His grimaces from the pain of his broken ribs or whatever the hell's wrong with him is just there. It's horrible. I mean, the acting just got awful. I mean, it was just god awful.
Well, the people exploding into laughter, and it was impossible to not explode into laughter with that. I just don't know how John Cena did that in a rehearsal, and then they thought that was a good idea, that face. It was ridiculous.
Well, the part where Cena came out at the beginning with Punk and said, hey, let me show you how to do this. So-and-so is going to come out, this is going to happen. I thought, why don't you just bring the format of the show out and read it? Maybe that would have worked, you know. And in the fourth quarter, this is going to happen. And I mean, earlier this week I read an interview that my dear friend Harley Race had done for, I think, a newspaper in Missouri or Kansas, someplace. And I should have written it down. I didn't. But he told the interviewer something to the effect that as long as he was alive, wrestling would be. And I feel the same way. And I think, sadly enough, when we're gone, not just Harley and I, but those like us, it's gone. It's gone now. It's horrible acting, bad vaudeville, no logic, no common sense, no not much rhyme or reason. I my only hope is that I can get to, you know, as far as WrestleMania and actually watch Hunter and Mark Callis have a wrestling match, which would be kind of really cool. And Harley also said to this interviewer, the effect that they talk a lot because they can't do a lot in the ring, but they can't talk for 60 minutes. But I think they're trying. I think if they can actually do a two-hour talk show, they'll probably end up. And the reason, Harley's reasoning was the same as mine has been for the last, I don't know how long we've been talking, Mike, is that the product itself is weak. And they do everything to disguise that. They do everything to cover that. They do everything to try to mask that. They don't do anything to improve it. That's the sad part. I mean, it's kind of like Zach's flat tire. If he'd run around and change spark plugs, put new wiper blades on, the damn tire's still flat. You know, and
yeah,
that's the sad reality of it. And if those listening find that negative, then kiss my ass, because it's a fact of life.
Well, we've talked about it so much on here. It's just like, you know, with all the tools they have at their disposal, and they can make the change. And it's, you know, you start wondering, is it too, you know, you wonder where it starts being too late, because you've talked about not being able to, they're not cultivating any fans out of this. You're not going to get lifelong people who hang in there for it. It's a terrible thing to think about, but, you know, everybody always says, you can always recover from scorched earth. It's a matter of how long how bad of a death something dies before you have the ability to rebuild it. Can you honestly foresee WWE as a company with the amount of money they have? Do you think they just go along with this type of, you know, Harlem Globetrotters level show forever? Or do you see people just tuning out completely, you know, ratings dropping and it not being as...
I think you're always going to find some semblance of, you know, I mean, here's, and when I say this, I don't mean this to be insulting to anybody. I love the Three Stooges as a child, I understand their art and their craft, but I don't watch the Three Stooges now. When I say I've outgrown it, not that I'm so sophisticated or matured, it's just that it's not my cup of tea, you know. My wife enjoys watching a lot of the old black and white movies and stuff. I'm not, you know, personally into that. So if you're selling old black and white movies, you'll sell them to Alice. You won't, you know, but you won't sell them to me. And my point being that they keep, you know, I kind of used this analogy before. You're not, if your football franchise sucks, you can't change football. So you better do something to improve, you know, your team so that the fans keep buying tickets. But these people continue to change the end, you know, what they're doing, I mean, or the face of it, trying, and so they will find somebody that likes it. You know, it's like, again, a lot of people were entertained by Chikara. It's not my cup of tea. But that's it. How many versions of what you might call professional wrestling are out there today? And I don't call it, I mean, you know, but actual professional wrestling, you know, isn't, I mean, the psychology of it isn't there even. And I have to say that, you know, I'm a little disappointed with what I'm seeing in ROH Street. And now you can go ahead and blow some smoke here because Bob's coming on, but I don't intend to, if you want. Tell me if you're as enthused today as you were 6 weeks ago.
Absolutely not. And I don't know if you were on or not. I don't think you were, actually. When Rich and I were talking about the last iPay-per-view at the end of December, Final Battle, and it was, you know, there were problems with it in a lot of different aspects, but in a way, I mean, I came away from it going, ROH identity crisis. Because there were issues with how it was laid out, with some production things and things like that, but it was just, you know, you can see where there were things connected that were, you know, this is great, this is what ROH is really good for, but then there was the flip side of it with, we're going to get this match in, God knows, no matter what, who cares if we're already, you know, going 4 hours and everything. It just, there were a lot of problems that way, and I wanted to kind of ask you about the Chikara tie-in. I've been a proponent of Chikara in that family type stuff, kids, it's not, you know, traditional professional wrestling, but, you know, I think it has a place. I don't think it's something that you go to constantly unless you like that sort of thing, you know, but it's a unique type of thing. They do a great job marketing in their little space. They do a great job drawing. They're very, you know, cutting edge and unique, and they've been able to really carve out their niche. Now, when it comes to being with Ring of Honor, I don't know, unless it's just a marketing thing for Chicago so they can split the cost of the arena, I don't see how this necessarily helps anything at all. And in fact, seems to muddy what they kind of want to do, with the exception of it can be kind of a family thing, although I don't know. I what's your opinion on hearing about it, and does it have a place lower on the card? I mean, where does it have a place?
Not on my card. And when I say that, you're right. It you know, you can find a place. You can sell something. I mean, you can sell virtually anything someplace. Now, there's some guys on that work at Chicago that are very talented. Drew Gulak is one that I'm very high on, not as an ant, but as Drew Gulak. I saw their product up in Baltimore when I was last time I was up for CZW. DJ and I went up to a show there. I saw it. Okay, I saw it. It was theater. It was choreographed. Now, if I were throwing a birthday party and wanted to do something wrestling themed for my 12-year-old son or 9-year-old grandson or something, okay, that's something I might put on, but it's not something I'm going to try to sell to the masses. Or maybe some people with theatrical backgrounds would find it amusing or entertaining. And I honestly think Quackenbush does a good job of marketing it. You know, it's just not my bag, and it's not professional wrestling. Whether you can call it whatever you want, I'm like yourself. When I heard of the invasion, I thought, oh my God. That was my first horrified thought. I mean, it really was, because you're right. I do not see the, unless it's something about splitting cost or for one particular market, I do not see the value in that with Ring of Honor. And what you're talking about, the final battle, any thought that actually anything done in an MMA vein on Ring of Honor that might be legitimate, they killed any thought of that. The length of the show, yes. The chair shots, horrifying. The one thing I saw on their TV this last week is Jimmy Fine, I obviously probably didn't really, but I mean, in theory, the chair, if you hit somebody with a chair, you get $5,000, and I'm, to try to, but that wouldn't have happened. I said at the time, if they weren't told not to do it, then you can't call, take them to task. After they've done it, but if they've been told not to do it, then if it's my company, somebody is legitimately going to lose money on it, and they're legitimately going to sit out for a while if they're under contract to me, because that's in this day and age, chair shots to the head, unprotected, or somebody just sticking their head out to get hit is just dumb. I don't know. I'd like to say it nicer, but there is no nicer way to say that, and it's not macho and it's not cool. It's stupid. I mean, it's legitimately stupid. And like I say, it's, when I watch all the Muay Thai kicks, it's amazing that in real martial arts, mixed martial arts, that one kick ends a match, and in real ROH, 15,000 kicks don't stop anything. it's like holding up a sign. We're putting on a show.
Yes, yes. And, I'm going to take a little short break here, a little two-minute break here. But when we come back, I want to switch gears back before Bob comes on to a show coming up this Sunday in the Royal Rumble. Raw was an issue in itself, but the Rumble lineup is interesting to say the least. So we'll be back here in about 2 minutes here on Ringside Wrap.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Red Gunkle or Gordon Soley? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling
at the Academy Theater in Avondale State.
We're also at the Masquerade every month or so.
Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling.
And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
Tied a wrap, Mike Sempervivi along with Les Thatcher and Rich Tate hiding out in the back. And as you hear right there, Etta James, who passed away, I believe it was on January 20th, Blues Hall of Famer, incredible singer, incredible story, lived a long and very interesting and at times very painful life. But she just passed away, and as we come in and out of break here tonight on Ringside Rap, we're going to be playing a little bit of her. So as our little tribute, I know Rich was a fan, I was a fan. Les, not sure if you were or not.
I'm an R&B fan. I'm believe me, I'm black in my soul, brother. I mean, I really am. I was listening to that back when I was 14 years old. You know, I didn't realize she's not much older than me, and when she first started recording, she couldn't have been too old then. I mean, I remember hearing Etta James in the 50s. I don't know if it's Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but he's somebody from back in that era. He was beginning as a disc jockey, but Johnny Otis passed away last week. The man who did Willie and the Hand Jive, George Thurgood. Later, but Johnny Otis did it originally, Willie and the Hand Jive. So he passed away last week as well.
Yeah, funny. I'm going to write that book one day, Professional Wrestling Taught Me Everything. And it's Willie and the Hand Jive right there reminded me of the video that Bill Apter was over, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, sponsored with Jim Crockett. It was Dusty Rhodes' video that they would type up in the magazines. That was one of the bonuses.
If you want to see that, go on Observer and the show radio sites, and on the show we recorded last Saturday, Vic posted a link to that. He posted a link to the original to the Johnny Otis that was done in a movie back then, and then one of the listeners posted a link to the Thurgood thing. So yeah, they're both on there. Yeah,
that's right. Didn't know everything was on YouTube.
It is. But yeah, you're right. It was. But I was amazed that she was. You know, as a teenager, I'm thinking, well, she must be, an adult. By teenage terms, probably think she's in her mid-20s or even older than that. But obviously, she was just a few years older than I am. So. But yeah, I was a big fan.
Yeah, that's Lacey. I mean, 2010. I remember she had a long running issue with with heroin, as many did, as, you know, in the music world, especially in when it came to black music and blues music, and you know, with a lot of guys, from Davey Huey to, I mean, there were plenty of people, but in 2010, which is proof that, you know, you always have to be careful, she had gotten into an issue with painkillers, and again, it was just, it's amazing that the life that she had led, and then just all the accolades, and I don't want to compare it to Randy Savage when it came to mainstream media, but in a way it was kind of like that, because it was very surprising, the incredible swath of musicians of all sorts of different type of music, because you think, okay, Adele and Amy Winehouse and a lot of soul, Joss Stone, sulfur singers that you would be expected to really be influenced by her, but many of the accolades that came out for her came from all across the, you know, many aspects of music, which I thought was, I was really, you know, kind of blown away by, because it's, you know, when you listen to music now, and you know, at least in my age and the people around you and the people that are younger, it's, you know, it's, you don't think they have any musical taste at all with some of the stuff you hear on the radio. So
right.
It was actually nice to hear.
Yeah, well, I think Amy Winehouse from that same era, Laverne Baker, Ruth Brown, were also, you know, some very, very, very good R&B artists as well. If you remember Jim Dandy, that was Laverne Baker. She made that a hit. But anyway, yeah, we're all getting old, and it's over for all of us at some point in time, isn't it, Mike? Except for you, you're young and frisky.
I don't know. I have to pay to watch the Royal Rumble on Sunday and actually watch that. So if that's not going to age me incredibly, I don't know what is, if I don't have a heart attack actually thinking of the $40 or $50 I'm going to have to waste on this thing to watch it. But yeah, it's the big elephant in the room. It is the Royal Rumble, an event that, well, most people used to look forward to every year. It's not that people don't anymore, but in the condition WWE's in when it comes to their booking and their complete aversion to money and trying to make anything with these pay-per-views, it's you know, it's really disappointing that you know, they're limping into it. But when it comes to the Sunday, Kane, obviously, again, you know, we're still a couple months off till The Rock and John Cena. With the reaction that Kane and Cena has gotten, does this thing drop dead and end at Royal Rumble, or do they try to push it out another month just to stave off Cena and Rock?
Wow. You know what? I don't know. I don't know that, you know, as hard as they push it, I just don't know how much interest there really is in it. You know, I mean, I don't know. You know, I don't see a lot of strength in it. You know, I really respect, Glenn has worked his butt off for that company and has been buried in some really stupid storylines, but you know, he's been a game. He's done anything and everything they've asked, and he, you know, he's should not only earn people's respect, but the fact that he, you know, the whatever money he's made, he's certainly earned as well. But I don't know that this angle past, well, you know, past Sunday night makes any sense.
Does your gut say? Do you think, John, that Vince McMahon's going, damn it, no, we're just going to keep grinding and shoving it down, and they will like it no matter what? Or do you think there's ever any, do you think there's enough pause? Because, again, with the way the live crowd has reacted and the way people, again, they don't look at the internet, they spite that, they spite what you say, they spite what a lot of people say to do their thing. But, I mean, with the general apathy and laughter of that crowd, I mean, do you think there's any pause there for them to switch things up if they had planned to keep it going?
No, I really don't. You know, but you made a point earlier, too. It's just, you know, they basically, they get an idea, and they're going to prove their point. Well, most times they don't prove their point, but, you know, they're going to continue because this was our decision, and we know what you like, and if you don't like what we know, then we're going to try to make you like it. So, you know, no, I don't see. Well, here's the thing, too. You know, they've come back so strong with this, and Cena obviously has to have some, well, strength. I mean, my God, you can't make him, you know, he's Superman without a cape as it is. But I was going to say, he's got to be strong going into Mania, so there's no way that Glenn can beat him. I mean, there's a million ways Glenn could beat him, but, you know, in the terms of making, you know, making him and Rock still hot for WrestleMania, it doesn't make sense for Glenn to beat him. So you brought Glenn back with this whole new thing, and he's going to, you know, drag people to hell in a new mask, and everyone's horrified and, you know, running for their lives, and then you're going to beat him. So what have you done in the overall scheme of things? You know, why have you wasted him and the time? You know, when it just, you know, there's a million other things you could have done here. You know, you could have had some middle card heel with a little strength come out and say, hey, Cena, you know, you think you're going to make a reputation by wrestling Rock at WrestleMania. Well, you know, I want a shot at taking you out and you know, or I mean, some kind of stipulation where if you get, you know, if I get by you, then I get the shot at Rock and I'm going to make my name. You know, or make my bones, and you know, and you can beat this guy, and it's, I won't say meaningless, but it's you know, it doesn't have the impact of just bringing Kane back with the whole, you know, the whole new shtick, and then beating him, and when I say beat him, you've got to do that Sunday night, I think, don't you? I mean, do you see a way around that? I mean, they can have no contest or throw it out or something, but that's, you know, that's not much value either.
Well, they love copying TNA when it comes to theme pay-per-views and a lot of other stupidity and lunacy that they don't, you know, you'd almost think they were doing it purposely, so it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, you know, the scenario you just gave, they had a chance to do that with Jack Swagger, but instead they give him the U.S. title under a guy who's, you know, injured and is limping into the match and then has Cena beat him to death with steps. But, you know what, I'm going to say there's one redeeming value to that. There's been two times where John Cena has not looked like a schmuck and went out there to whip ass for all the wrong reasons in this last time, to me at least, with Jack Swagger, but he got a positive reaction. The other last time he did this was beating up Alberto Del Rio, who was a guy people hated without a bunch of nonsense after Money in the Bank. I always keep wondering, have they killed Cena, you know, for long term? And I wonder about that. Is he a Lazarus-type guy? A Kane, a Undertaker, where no matter what's thrown at them, he's going to be able to survive things. Because, again, as much as people love to boo him and beat on him and this dopey stuff they do, when he decides to whip ass and he's presented seriously, people respond to that. And, again, that was the only good thing I took out of him beating up Jack Swagger for, but Cena always looking like a schmuck over and over again, and the goofy comedy and the dumb, over-the-top cartoonishness, do you think they can kill him, or do you think he's always going to be able, because of his personality and the way he is, to survive? Because I swear they seem to be doing their best to do it.
Well, I think that, you know, in terms of believing in him as a strong, like a Steve Austin or you know, somebody of that ilk as a babyface, or even Hogan, who had a cartoonish gimmick, but he knew how to play, you know, play the people, and he was smart enough to sell before he made his comebacks. That's, you know, no, I don't think, you know, I think children, you know, John has an appeal, you know, obviously he's a good-looking young man, you know, with a great physique, so he has an appeal to girls, women, and he has an appeal to children. And I think that's, you know, that's sustaining to a certain degree. But in terms, but you realize the thing with Austin, everybody was behind him, right? I mean, I remember one time at Cincinnati Gardens here years ago, walking around, you know, the hallways before the show, and went to the, I told somebody in the back, I said, my God, I said, I can't tell you how many young men out there have their heads shaved, you know, wearing cutoff jeans you know, Steve Austin and you know, Austin 316 t-shirts. I mean, you know, because he had that kind of impact. And no, John doesn't have that kind of impact. I mean, again, you know, I'll say about John, similar to what I said about Glenn, John works his ass off, and you know, he's not a great worker. What he does charity-wise and as the face of the company, I think he earns every penny he gets. But no, he doesn't have that type of power. But they're in a position they don't have anybody. You know, and I like CM. I mean, and he's a good worker, but he's not. You know, he's not the guy's going to fill that void either. And the way, you know, and I'll tell you one thing now, too. Listen to Punk. The long, drawn-out dissertations are not doing him any favors.
No.
Because he's not Rock and he's not Austin or Foley when Foley was hot or guys like that. So, I mean, it's just and the other part is when you know, Jim Crockett Sr. made a point in my young head years ago when he said, baby faces on the microphone don't say things they can't back up. In other words, you don't go out. He won't go out and say anything he wants because he doesn't have to back it up, and he can lie, bold-faced lie, and that gets him more heat. But the baby face tells you he's going to do something, he better do it. Punk is going to change the face's business, and when is that going to start? What century? When do I see that happen?
I'm going to assume never.
Okay, but we continually hear that, right?
Yeah.
And I will say this to a diminishing degree, the Jericho thing is entertaining, and I'm curious. You know, it's amazing. I sit and watch, of course I see it, I only see it on television, but. Well, like last week in the tag match, I thought when he came in and started the whole you yell, he telegraphed what he was going to do, so he didn't get the reaction. What I would have done there in his shoes, I would have taken the tag, I would have come in like I was going right in there and lock up with a guy across the ring from me. I'd have went and made that move until I got within a couple feet of him. I'd have made an extreme right or left turn, scooted out, and never gone through the, here, let me hear you over there, hear you over here. I think that was the wrong time for that. And he would have got a stronger reaction because they wouldn't have realized until the last moment what he was going to do. The thing this week, well, the best two things on the show Monday night, Mike, were the video package for Rumble. You know, giving you the numbers, this many guys did this and this many guys did that and so forth, and the little Jericho package. And that was pretty much the show.
Well, let's actually hold that thought for one moment here because we're going to be going to break because our guest has joined us. And I know he's got, I'm sure, some things to say about this too, but, you know, he's kind of a heel in the face at the same time. He's a heel in Ring of Honor. But, you know, as a true babyface would do, he at least backs up the words that he says. And coming back from the break, our fifth Beatle here at Ringside Rap, Brutal Bob Evans. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Paul McCartney on behalf of Rad. If you're drinking, you can't drive my car or any car. And remember, don't drink and drive. It's just not worth it.
Public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hey, parents! Introducing the Communicizer. Go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
I love you, Dad.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Hi there, I'm Tim McGraw. One of the great things about music is how it brings people together.
Kids like to hang out, listen to music, and talk about what's hot and what's not on the music scene. And playing instruments and singing provides a way for young people to get together and interact in a cooperative and respectful way. Kids who play in school ensembles understand that every part has to work together for the result to be the magical art called music. Your local school music programs provide a golden opportunity for your child to experience the rewards of learning music. Why not pay a visit to the music teacher to find out what's going on? Get your kids involved with school music.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Musical Instruments, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Hey, baby, this is what you'll have to do to make me love you too. Got to dance with me, Henry. Dance with me, Henry. Rock with me, Henry. Talk to me, Henry.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Rap. Mike Sempervivi along with Les Thatcher. And I apologize for anyone who had to hear my screaming, crying child in the first 45 minutes of the show. I believe he is asleep. And a man that knows all about screaming, crying children, as he has got 75 of them spread out across the Northeast. Our guest at this time from Ring of Honor, Brutal Bob Evans. Bob, how are you, sir?
75 screaming kids. Jeez, Mike, as you know, my schedule's already busy enough. I don't think I need 73 additional children added to the mix. So,
I was thinking, my God, you're spending more time spewing.
Should we just stop there?
I don't know when I mentioned he was trying to steal my gimmick earlier, Bob, because I've been called the Renaissance Man of the business, and I said, well, let's call Bob the Karma Sutra. And I didn't realize that you had spawned 75 children, or I'd called you other things besides that.
Exactly. And ladies
Dean Malenko was always overrated with 1,001 holes. All he needed was 69.
Oh boy.
Okay. I'm done for this evening.
this is taking a terrible turn. But this also does prove that me and Les are indeed not the same person, because it seems like every time I was on, Les wasn't on, and every time Les was on, I wasn't on. So this proves that we are two actual separate and unique
exactly.
individuals.
And I have hair.
Absolutely. A beautiful head of hair, by the way. Hey, Les, by the way, you were on fire on that weekend show. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to insert myself into this conversation. I really enjoyed what you had to say over the weekend with the boys on Wrestling Observer, and I also I love the interview with Terry. You know, Terry and I are pretty close, and you and I are pretty close, so it was great to hear you guys reminisce and get you guys in the same room, so to speak, virtual or whatever, and let you guys chatted out. That was great. So,
thank you.
Yeah, but I really liked your lessons to the young guys. I made sure that the guys I mentor, I made sure I had them listen to it and then tell me what they thought, and they all got quite a bit out of it. And then, like I said, you had a lot to say over the weekend, which I thought was some good lessons to the guys. You know, I think sometimes you get so passionate, and I'm the same way, that I think sometimes the message is lost, but I just really felt like you were on target more than ever the past couple weeks. So I hope everybody takes the time to listen to that stuff if they can. So
thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, because
These guys probably don't know what you and I are talking about.
That's all right. We'll just have our own conversation and keep everyone.
Okay, cool. Well, Mike, once Mike gets going, we can't shut him up anyway. So we'll just talk around.
Mike has his own show and makes $7,000 a week doing that. So we only make $3,000 a week. So we're working our way up.
There you go. Mike, what we're talking about is the insanity of the low key. Kick.
Oh, Jesus Christmas, yes.
I just want to say this.
If the old PPH show, I would poke fun at Low Key for his voice and things like that. And you know, nice guy. I know people that I've met. I've never actually personally met him. You know, everybody always says great things about him. One of my problems has always been with him, though. Stop. You don't have to kick a guy full force. And again, I don't know. I have to ask you guys. I don't know necessarily whose fault that was but at the end of the day, if that guy didn't know how to take that, and it's impossible to take because I've seen Jushin Liger do it for years. I've seen other guys in Japan do it for years. And you can't really control it all that well. Lance Storm talked about it this week, too.
Yep, sure
did. It drove me nuts. And the thing that really pissed me off was, F happens, it really does. But the fact that the guy is out cold, he's out cold, and everybody knows he's out cold. The double foot stomp, just go pull his legs out, pin him, and then figure out a way, if this was going to be their big monster guy, figure out a way to redo something with him if people don't take him seriously because he got knocked out. Fine, figure out something crazy to do with him, but that was lunacy to me. I'm sorry.
There
to
was nothing
about
creative,
it.
Mike. The kid was out. The referee knew he was out.
Yeah.
Key was so busy getting Key over that I don't know if he knew anything other than the fact that he is God. And the manager knew he was out. And the thing you do there is you drag him in the middle of the ring and you lay on him. You do not give him another kick and then go to the top rope and do that stupid, very dangerous stomp. Period. You don't.
I tend to agree with you. I have met Low Key and I do like him. I don't think he's a bad person. I will be polite and diplomatic as best I can in saying that I think our philosophies of professional wrestling are very different. I like submission wrestling. I think wrestling matches with submissions are cool. I think that's one of the things that UFC has brought to the table. That's really helped make WWE and TNA and ROH more exciting. The submissions and the guy snapping a hold on the guy and the crowd chanting tap, 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 and the guy makes the ropes or he doesn't make the ropes and taps out. I think that's exciting. I think that's really added something different to the pro wrestling picture that I think has really helped. But the kicks, I've never been a huge fan of. Les said it yourself. Les and I are actually going to try to get some money together and enter Eddie Edwards into the UFC because he can obviously withstand any kick from any human being over 100 times in a match. That's pretty impressive. And I've known Eddie since he was 17. So I never knew he had such superhuman powers, or I wouldn't have harassed him so much when he was coming up. So now I'm kind of regretting my decision. So I'm going to have to, carry his bags or something for a while and just be his best friend so he doesn't beat me up. But I think, and I don't mind the kicks, it's not my thing, and different strokes for different folks, but I think there's also a way to put it in as more of a shock value thing where you hit one or two, less is more, and I mean L-E-S-S is more, not L-E-S is more, but less is more. But less is more in the fact that, I think they lose their impact, obviously, and I think that's one of the things that over the sheer stupidity of why are we trying to hurt each other when the art is to try to minimize the pain and suffering that we do when we do what we do. Like, why are we trying to beat each other up? And why are you a cool guy for knocking somebody out when they open themselves up to you? If Mike Tyson walked up to me and let me take a bunch of shots at him without any chance of him retaliating, I could probably hurt him. But that's not would I be a tough guy for that? No, that would just be that would just be Mike Tyson giving me open shots on him, you know? So I don't see the machoism, or it's probably not a word, but, you know, the what is that? You know, like, what is that? What does that prove? What does it mean? If it's, you know, if it's entertainment, if it's a show, if it's showbiz, any way you want to say it, why are we trying? Isn't the art to make it look really? Isn't the art to make it look real, quote unquote? And then, you know, keep the magic alive, or is the art just to beat the shit out of each other? I don't really know. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, back in the day, Bob, he would have got his ass handed to him by somebody already.
I'm surprised he hasn't already, because, you know, I've heard a lot of things about him, and I wish this is when I really wish our close friend Steve Bradley was still alive, because Steve would probably, I don't think he'd tell the stories publicly, but there's some private stories about Loki, and it's nothing bad. It's nothing. He's not like I said, he's not a bad kid, but it's just some delusions that exist there. Like you said, trying to get Loki over, you know, and I don't know if somebody ever, I saw the place that he trained. It was a very rough place with a lot of street kids there, a lot of streetwise kids when he trained for pro wrestling. So I don't know if maybe it came out of that, or I don't know if he just has a real love for, martial arts and mixed martial arts, and he just wants to incorporate that and go all the way to the edge. But I,
Bob,
as much as I like him, I don't agree with it, you know?
Well, I'll throw in there too, and I think, and I don't, you know, I think there's also a fascination with what some people's perception has been with Japanese wrestling, and some, you know, and there's some truth to it in a way, but there's also guys with this, the mentality of what quote unquote strong style is. And
right.
His body was ravaged by cancer and some other things, but Kobashi is a shell. Misawa has passed away. There are guys, and again, I'm not saying every guy went through this, but, you know, it wasn't smart. And we realize that more now. It wasn't smart, and it wasn't the thing to do. And a lot of people really made fun of Toshiaki Kawada. There was that group Hustle that started in Japan, you know, that Takada was a part of. And they, you know, the initial thing was get Goldberg, get Dusty Rhodes. They were going to try to do a real promotion. They realized they couldn't do it. Pride Fighting Championships, which gave them money, went under. They decided to become basically a comedy promotion. There was really nothing like that in Japan, but it was going to be over-the-top WWE, we're going to be pro-wrest. And a lot of people laughed at Kawada, and they killed, like, he killed his legacy because he was out there singing. He was out there having a good time, and it got me because it was like, you know what? This guy gave his whole life. Why should he be 50 years old like a Takayama slamming himself? You know, and again, Takayama's another great example of this. You know, guys killing each other, let him make some money, not destroying his body anymore. And like, people trashed his legacy, you know, for in the kicks and all this other stuff. I mean, my God. And again, I know that was a rant that is, I just went off there, but that's what always drove me nuts when I was doing a pure Japanese wrestling show and discussing low key. I mean, it's like the chair shots. There's nothing cool about kicking the crap out of people. There's a logic gap to me there that doesn't make any sense. And I think he's not the only one who I think pulled from what they thought Japanese wrestling is or what they think it is and try to say that that's what it's about. It's not.
Well, I wrestled Prince Devitt on 3 or 4 different occasions right before he went to Japan. He had come right out of 8 years straight of pro wrestling, but they taught shoot wrestling there first. And he was fantastic. I mean, he was fantastic in 2005, never mind now. But he didn't lay a glove on me, so to speak. I've worked out with 5 or 6 different Japanese wrestlers, and pretty good names, too. Aoki, Oh, the other fella. I'm sorry. I'm not as...
Fortima?
Yep. Worked out with him a little bit. And then there were a few other guys that were very, very well known and a very high reputation. And, again, easy, free and easy. I mean, granted, yeah, I'm sure they amp it up on the big shows or they amp it up in front of a crowd. But I didn't feel not taken care of. They didn't come across as dangerous to me. There's a difference between guys being a little tighter than other guys, and I think Les and Lance talked about that, working snug and all that. But there's still a difference. You know, there's still a great difference. And, it was funny that Les talked about locking up with Terry Taylor last week, and which I thought was funny because Terry's actually related that story to me separately from the radio show. So I thought that was funny because he was – when Terry runs his seminars, that's one of the first stories he tells, because half the guys lock up with him and try to kill him because they're trying to be impressive or whatnot. And my whole thing is, I think way too many guys wrestle like weekend warriors, and nobody wrestles like they're trying to make a living at it. If I'm wrestling Les and I'm wrestling him once and I'm not going to see him again for 6 months, maybe I don't care about his health and safety as much as the guy I have to ride on the road with for the next 25 days. And I think guys need to share that philosophy a lot more. Like, let's do this for a living. You know, that's why I'd always got mad at guys who had, you know, they might have a crappy match and then they mope around and they take the whole show down with them because they're mad that they had a crappy match. It's like, yeah, but a pro, just like a relief pitcher in baseball, you got to put that away and go the next day and go again. You can't worry about having one bad match. You know, you got to keep going. You got to be a pro, and it's all about being a professional. Even if you're not making money, you still have to fake it till you make it. You still have to act like a professional and be professional to eventually make money. And I think in Ring of Honor, we're dealing with so many young guys from so many different backgrounds, and they still have that. A lot of them still have that quote unquote indie mentality. And this is right back to what you said too, Mike, about the delusion and illusion of Japanese wrestling. I think there's a few guys in the independents right now, and I won't name names, but connect your own dots, who think have this certain opinion of Dynamite Kid. And I know Buddy Wayne real well, and you guys probably know him from the Wrestling Observer shows. He said, Dynamite Kid, as long as you didn't mess with him, he was as easygoing a guy as anyone you would know. He was fine. He was all business, but he wasn't a mean guy. He was a good guy, and he was good to work with in the ring. So this idea that Dynamite Kid beats everybody up and has his head down and has a terrible attitude with everyone, like that's a mythological version of what Dynamite Kid was. And I think there's a lot of mythology out there that everybody just buys into, you know, that you have to kick everybody's head off and you have to chop everyone 500 times. And, you know, I don't see the point in it, because if you were wrestling for a living, you wouldn't wrestle like that. You know, what's going to happen when we're wrestling 150 dates a year? We're going to be diving out of the ring. You know, the whole thing about dives. That's why I'm anxious to start wrestling in Ring of Honor, and I've been petitioning very heavily for it, because I have about 9 different defenses for these kooks diving on me, and one of them is just moving out of the way. Another one, but I'm going to do, and they're all going to be dedicated to Les. Just like Don Morocco used to dedicate the power driver to Jesse the Body Ventura, I'm going to dedicate all my dive defenses to Les Thatcher. And pop every time.
You know, Bob, when I watch stuff like, you know, I'll say it here, and, you know, Chad Collier, who's a legitimate amateur. I mean, Chad.
Oh, by the way, you always mention Chad. I'm just going to insert here. The first match I ever saw in Ring of Honor was your Matt Stryker versus Chad Collier. It's one of the best matches I've ever seen live. Go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah. I always tease Chad. I said, boy, your lineage, Malenko out of Thatcher, boy, you should be able to do something. But, you know, here's a guy, you know, the sad thing about that. Here's a guy who looks great, who can work, serious, who can legitimately wrestle and has to go to Europe to make a living is sad. But anyway, what I was going to say
absolutely.
Is, yeah, when he was on my roster years ago, before I'd ever seen Low Key or before but I'd heard of him and heard his reputation, right?
Yep.
And Chad said, you know, I've got a booking somewhere, and this is the guy I'm going to work with. And I'll tell you what I said to him. I said, the first time he stiffs you, hook his ass and beat him. I don't care if it's 2 minutes in, hook him and beat him.
And that's what, you know, one of them stiff kicks, Harley or Bill Miller or Danny Hodge or Briscoe would have taken it. Okay, that was a mistake. That was a potato.
Yeah, they'll take one. They won't take...
The second one, the match would have been over.
Right, they'll take
and
one.
And if he thinks he's short now, he'd have been 6 feet 1 inch tall by the time they got done with him. He pouts now. He would have been pouting then for sure. I mean,
well,
you know.
Go ahead, Alyssa.
You know,
I'm sorry. We're just rolling our eyes completely here, but it's just they were like, you know, he didn't get a fair shot in WWE. I said I really thought he did get a fair shot in WWE. I you know, I saw his match with I'm losing it. Nick Nemeth, it's Dolph Ziggler. And I thought Dolph greatly outshined him. He looked better. He had a better tan. He looked better in the ring. The kid looked a little nervous with him. And he got further than I did. So I'm not trying to say that I'm any better than he is. But he got put on a big stage and he did an okay job, but he didn't do a great job. And that's, you know, I really think that was the biggest thing. I don't think they had anything against Low-Key. I think they would have been happy to push him. I just don't think they saw the same things in him that he did.
Yeah.
You know, that's it happens all the time. You know, I'm sure we've all worked for offices where we thought we should be higher up on the card and they didn't. So
hey, the
don't
idea
you think
of him
Bob,
under a mask was actually the most intelligent thing that they could have done.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, and again, I'm not saying, because I think it was Mysterio, if I'm not mistaken, or may have been Sin Cara was already signed. They thought about the possibilities there, but I'm pretty sure it was Mysterio initially.
I think it was Mysterio, Mike. Yeah, I think you're right.
That would have made the most sense. And again, you Mysterio can do a lot of things, but I don't know if his appeal at this point it would be limited to kids and showcasing him on a certain place on a card. Because he's going to sell merchandise, he does appeal to kids, and you can do underdog things, but, you know, I don't know. I love him to death, but I don't see him anymore in that position. But that would have been a perfect thing for Low-Key to do. And frankly, you know, again, not talking, his facial expressions aren't there. He was not a great talker. He didn't, and I'm saying this as an outside, just what other people said, and a casual wrestling fan, he didn't suck him in. Daniel Bryan has something that sucks you in. CM Punk had something to suck you in. You know, guys who came up from that. Samoa Joe did initially in TNA when he went there. I mean, they had things to suck people in. And, you know,
yeah.
Low-Key, frankly, in America, and I'm not ripping the guy. I'm not saying anything, you know, terrible about him. But I'm just saying from my point of view, Low-Key's American career, and I'm not saying peaked this way, but he was at his best when he was standing next to Helix Skipper and Christopher Daniels. It was only a third part of the rotation of that little group that they had in TNA way back when. Honest to God, and again, I'm not saying that insultingly. I'm saying that as honestly, that's honestly what I believe.
Well, and the thing is, too, it's like if you're Rey Mysterio and you've had knee issues and back issues and neck issues and you're not 22 years old anymore, do you really want to take a kid along that you're going to have to work with and Americanize him for better or for worse, or, you know, let's call it what it is. You know, teach him how to work on a big stage, and say, look, we can't. You know, the stiff kicks are spectacular and they're cool, but dude, I'm working with you 18 out of the next 25 days, and I got kids, and I make X amount of dollars a year, and you kicking my head off every night is not going to happen because it just can't. We can't survive this road schedule. So let me show you how it works. You know, I think it would have been the best thing for Key, but I just don't know if it would have worked. You know, I think it would have been an interesting matchup, but I don't know if it would have been a feud or something, you know, but you never know. I mean, sometimes, maybe that's what, that would, like I said, I think that would have been the best thing for him because he could have, because Rey had to go through a lot of changes too. You know, Rey had to slow down his game. Rey had to, and I don't mean slow down as in be lazy. I mean slow down as in you got to work smart. If you're working 200 days a year, it's different than, hey, I work a couple shows for Ring of Honor here. I work a couple of shows indie days here, and I have a week and a half to heal up. I mean, it's just, it's a different mindset. And it's a, I don't know, for lack of a better term, it's a more professional mindset to be taking care of each other out there. you know.
Yeah, you know, and the size thing too. When Jamie, one of the best damn workers of young guys in the business at current times is an agent not even working. That's Jamie Noble, for Christ's sake.
Absolutely.
Oh God, yeah.
When Jamie was on my roster, and Val was down here, we had them on one of the Tuesday night showcases at the gym in a match. And now you talk about size difference. But,
oh yeah.
But when they went out there, everybody, you know, everyone you can tell, the fans are looking and saying, okay, you know, mismatch. But the way they told the story, it wasn't like, you know, Ray, I'll hang myself over the ropes, Ray, come and kick me, and I'll wait here until you get there. You know, I mean, Jamie took his Jamie brought Val down to size by taking his legs out. You know, it started out with Val overpowering him. But, I mean, they told a story.
Yep.
And when the match was over 15 minutes later, Val got his hand raised, but Jamie had earned more respect from those people than he had when he walked in there.
Right.
You know, and Bob will agree with me. I know that's part of the art of this business, not just let's go out and see how many spots we can fit in 5 minutes. It's, you know,
that's something we're
story.
Absolutely. I mean, that's something I'm trying to, you know, I mean, Ring of Honor has been a process for me, and I love it, but it was funny. I was commenting to a couple of the guys because I've actually gotten in there, and I go to all the training camps, and I try to wrestle in front of the guys, and I also get in the ring as soon as I can before every show that I'm at because I don't think half the guys know I wrestle, which is funny because, you know, I wrestled for so long, you know, but it's, you know, you're on a small stage, so I get in there, and I just try to be if I'm practicing, you know, with a baby face, I try to be a heel because my contention is one of the reasons that our business is our business right now and it's down is because to get a little inside now is no heels really know how to put heat on the baby face. And my guy's the only guy that's probably the only true heel in Ring of Honor. The other true heel in Ring of Honor is the baby face, Kevin Steen, you know, but Bennett's the only one that everyone hates. And I'm hated by association, but it's because heel to heat. And the thing is, Mike is, and I'm not just saying Mike because there's a lot of other guys that I think are trying to do it, but Mike's one of the few guys out there courageous enough to do something different. And I don't mean courageous like in the armed forces, but you know what I mean? Like just courageous in a wrestling ring where it's there's a lot of peer pressure there. And my whole thing is, like, guys, we have to break out of our shell. We have to stop being 900 Dean Malenko's on crack here. We have to be a bunch of different guys, a bunch of different personalities, a bunch of different styles, because that's what got us into wrestling in the first place. That's why WCW made in my opinion, the undercard was the reason that WCW, you know, they had the names on top to draw the casual fans, but then the hardcores had, you know, you got to see Dean Malenko wrestle somebody from a different country for five straight weeks, you know, on WCW defending the TV title or the Cruiserweight title or the U.S. title, whatever title he had. And we need to put a little bit more of that in instead of everybody kind of looking about the same, about, you know, wrestling about the same, doing about the same things, and here comes the dive, and here comes the thing. And, you know, I mean, we're trying, it's a process, you know.
I love you, Bob Evans.
and unfortunately, Bob, let's see, we're going to go to a break here real quick, and I'm going to just ask you this, although I think I know the answer anyway. You want to hold on after this break?
Absolutely. Let's
good.
Let's,
because we haven't even gotten into hashtag why not Bob yet. We sort of teased it there a little bit, and I want to get into that along with many other things too. But I know
Rich
is going to kill me. If we'll go to a break here, so we're going to go to a quick little break, and we'll be back.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head?
where you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling
at the Academy Theater in Avondale State.
We're also at the Masquerade every month or so.
Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling.
And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
As much as I love hearing the sound of my own voice, as well as the voices of Bob Evans and Les Thatcher, God, that song is great. Had to let one linger a little bit long. Sorry.
All right, Pete.
I can't sing like that anyway.
I was humming along. I was having fun, but.
Well, Bob, you know, you touched on it a little bit, you know, in talking and doing some lobbying and getting Maria and Mike out there to do a little bit of lobbying for you. Just listeners of this show know, you've been around a long time, as you said. Done a little
yes.
bit of wrestling there in your time. Ring of Honor in 2012. You know, I talked with you at length about this, not on any show, just, you know, off the record about, you know, ROH Final Battle. And, you know, I did give it the moniker Identity Crisis. I did say that, and you know, now we've got a union with Chikara going on. We've got all these different things taking place. Yet I'm not seeing Brutal Bob Evans in a wrestling ring yet, and I'm starting to wonder about this. Have you been replaced by Amps?
I did have a private meeting with the, and this is true. This is not a silly thing, but I did have a private meeting with some of the Muckety Mucks last time, and I can tell you that we're moving in that direction. That's the best way to say it. But my whole thing is, I don't feel slighted. Let me please put this out. This is a public and private forum. I would tell you this if we were talking just us. I don't feel slighted. I don't feel ungrateful. I don't feel like I've been mistreated in any way. I just don't think Bob Evans being in the ROH wrestling ring with everything that's been going on with Sinclair and everything that's been going on with all the great matches we've been having has been a priority. So it's just a matter of priority and not me being snubbed or anything like that. I can remember a conversation I had 2 years ago with Les just being a friend and listening to me at my frustration of how can I help Ring of Honor? I'm a veteran guy. I've wrestled a bunch, thousands of matches. I really feel like I can add something to this package. And Les says, I don't know, just keep at it. You know, just really, Les didn't have any advice for me except being a good listener. And, you know, that was the best thing he could have done for me. And I just kept at it, and I kept at it. And one of the things that doesn't get out publicly that much and what bothers me a little bit is the same camp they discovered Mike Bennett, they discovered Bob Evans. And I can tell you for sure, and this isn't just me, that the two stars of that camp were Mike Bennett and Bob Evans. I hung right with Mike on everything. In fact, we did a lot of the drills together, so I know we did. I know we did fantastic. And then we had great matches with other guys in separate, you know, in front of the upper guys, and we both got jobs out of it. And my whole thing is, I'm completely different from everything Ring of Honor has to offer. I'm unorthodox. I'm willing to take chances. I don't know if Les remembers this, but the match I had in at camp, the one he went to last year, I tried something completely different. I jumped in the ring and I pretended I had an injury, and the guy attacked my injury, and he said, "I really thought you were hurt there for a minute. You know, that was really interesting that you took that approach." And my whole thing is, I want something that's gonna stand out. I want to do something that's gonna be different in Ring of Honor. I'm not gonna reinvent the wheel. I'm gonna bring the wheel back to Ring of Honor. Everybody wants to have a square wheel. For some reason, they want to reinvent it—a square wheel, a rectangle wheel, a triangle wheel, whatever they want to do, or an octagon wheel for UFC. But they just don't want to have a wheel. They just don't want to have a wheel anymore. And it frustrates me. And my whole thing is, they have an issue right now with, like, a lot of the guys are pretty much all the same age, and there's not a lot of leadership. And my whole thing is, and I'll say this publicly to anyone that listens, let me wrestle each guy once on the roster, and they'll have their leader, and I don't need to win a match. You know, I feel that confident in my ability that I could really bring something different out in the guys. Is it going to be a quote-unquote five-star match? I don't know. Depends on your definition. But I can tell you that we're both going to learn something. We're both going to add something to the package, and it's going to be something different from what Ring of Honor has now. And do they need 72, 39-year-old guys on the show? No, but they could use one. Because guess what? Jim Cornette's line is, we have a bunch of young, good-looking guys here. Well, my contention is, there's nobody old and ugly to compare them to. So we have to have a couple of old and ugly guys in there to add in. And Les can tell you that there were some of these old workman-like guys in the territories, because Les has told stories himself about guys that help babysit him along and get him ready to the next level, and that's what I want to do. I have no aspirations of winning all the titles. I have no aspirations of being in all the main events, but I'll tell you what, I can hang with anybody on that roster.
Well, you know, that's what's lacking, I think, on the indies, too, is people with
right.
It's the blind leading the blind. There's nobody. I mean, you can say, well, this guy's got 5 years' experience, but 5 years' experience of what? You know,
as Zig Ziglar would say, Les, is it 5 years' experience or is it 1 year experience repeated five times?
yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's very good. Yeah, but you're right. And the leadership thing, you know, as the old saying goes, even a cattle stampede has a leader. And,
right.
And that's what I've said to Mike, I don't know if you, before you came on, I said, when Ring of Honor TV started, I was a strong supporter. And I'm still, I mean, there's, you know, I've worked with Eddie and I've worked with Davey and,
sure.
You know, several of the guys on there, but, and Adam Cole. But when the first match looks like the second match, which looks like the third match, which
correct.
Looks like the fourth match, and there's 5,000 false finishes in every match, and there's at least
yep.
one dive, and, you know, it's like, okay, I'm done. it's self-defeating in that respect. It's just everything is too much, and you're right. Back in the day, if you tried to, if you know, as a young guy, you tried to overdo that. The old guy reeled your ass in physically. He didn't
yep.
verbally. You know, it was like, oops, I made a mistake here. I can feel that I made a mistake.
Yep.
You know, and that's not, you know, that's not there anymore. It's just it's like I watch these guys stand in a corner and blast each other 20 times.
Yep.
Harley would never hit you 20 times. If he hit you 5 times and you weren't down, I can go to the bank with the fact you'll go down on the 5th time.
Oh, yeah.
Won't get back
one
up.
One way or the other, right?
Yes, exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a shame. I mean, you know, it's a shame that you have to think that way, but it's because they're taking the realism out of it. You know, a couple years ago down in Charlotte at that NWA Legends thing, I was doing, a color for their television taping, or their show, house show, actually, on Saturday night.
And I won't mention the two guys, but they're both prominent in different companies now. And they stood there and, like, I forget, punched or chopped each other, like, it seemed like all night. And three people I noticed got up and left the auditorium. Those three people were Johnny Walker, Mr. Wrestling 2,
mm-hmm.
Billy Robinson, and Harley Race.
Wow.
And so that was not a testament to these people's talent. And the crazy thing was, you know, that weekend, Walker had a heart attack and was in the hospital, you know, was put in the hospital there. And we stayed in town a couple of days after the convention, the wife and I, and went to visit. And in his state, one of the first things he asked me when I got to the hospital, he said, "You think those guys know a hold? Do they actually know how to work?"
Well,
no.
And that's the struggle, because and the thing is, I really feel like I've come a long way as far as being open-minded, because about 3-4 years ago I had a I don't know if it was a, you know, Walk With Me to Jesus meeting, or if it was just some kind of an awakening or an epiphany where I just said, you know, maybe your attitude sucks. Maybe you have to be a little bit more open-minded and reach out to these guys and help them. And it's actually been pretty beneficial. I have actually been able to help a lot of the guys, and my spirit is one of positivity, and I want to come in and help. I don't want to take anybody's job. I want to help them do their job better. I'm not looking to I can do your job better. I'm saying, let me help you add to the spectacularness of what you do. You know, it's you go to the show, and a lot of the guys are working out before the show, and they're practicing jumping to the top rope 900 different ways. And I'm like, well, you guys already know how to do that. Why don't you practice something you don't know how to do? That's what practice is.
Yeah, like a top wrist lock. There's a clever idea.
Yeah, I mean, we had a practice yesterday, and one of the guys, it was a lot of real new guys, and I was there just to kind of go get a workout in, and one of the trainers was who I really like. He actually helped break me in a long time ago, and he said, "Hey, we're going to work some holds. Do you mind helping out?" And I said, "Do I?" Because that's my favorite part of wrestling. So we just did a bunch of stuff, and one of the spots I did was the guy grabbed me in a wrist lock, and I tried everything I could to get out of the wrist lock, and I didn't. And we did 3.5 minutes on it, and it was a kid who didn't know how to do anything. He just was kind enough and smart enough to listen. And it looked pretty good. Was it perfect? No, but it looked like wrestling. It looked like a struggle. It didn't look like we whiffed anything or we ran a bunch of spots. And I think you just have to show something a little different on the card that you can show that. Now, if we all went back and did all that 9 matches in a row, I don't think that would come across very well either. But I think we need to mix it up. I think there's room for everybody. You know, I'm not
right.
looking to kick anybody out of the house. I just think we need, you know, we can have different people to come in and add to the package. That's all. So that's
you,
where
you know,
I
you
come
touched,
in.
Yeah, you
know?
Touched on something when you were mentioning WCW before, and I think there's where we're, you know, as a spectator for me during the Monday Night Wars, WWF, the top matches, I could care less about all the gimmicks. And I still can care less about all the gimmicks they have underneath, you know.
Right.
But, I mean, they had all the gimmicks underneath, but they had, Hart and Austin and those guys on top. And, yes, I wanted to see that. But I turned on WCW not to see Hogan and Warrior and those guys, but to see Benoit and Malenko and Guerrero and, you know, and Jericho, and plus you had a little bit of lucha, you had some very good chain wrestling, and you had some showmanship, but it was a potpourri. It was a little something for everybody.
Sure.
And that's what's lacking. I think on the WWE roster is when I say throwback, I don't mean that like, you know, but I mean going back to some classic psychology and stuff. And I know some young people say Randy Orton is too slow. No, Randy Orton actually knows how to work.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, Bob, let me ask you.
Sure.
Oh, sorry, Les.
No, I just had a quick thing. I think unless you bring this up a lot, too, about Triple H and Undertaker. The funniest thing is, like, Triple H and Shawn Michaels get, I think they get more than their lion's share of the credit for that match. Undertaker was in all three of the best matches in the last three WrestleManias, guys.
Right.
You know, and there's a big guy who works, well, the last couple of years he's worked, like, five times over 2 years, and he still has the best match on the show. And this is a guy who's had operations and gone through divorces and weddings and all kinds of stuff happened to him, and he still manages to have the best match on the show. And we watch that, and, you know, we appreciate it, and a lot of people appreciate it, but a lot of people knock it, too. And I've never understood how you can knock anything that's successful. Even if you don't like it, you can learn from it. Like, I may not appreciate something, but if it draws money, I have to look at why it drew money.
Sure.
Bob, that's what I kind of wanted to ask you. You know, I grew up in a lucky time. Lucky a father was a wrestling fan, even though my mother hated it. So, you know, I can remember being three, and I remember little dashes of memories, and we were in Chicago, and AWA must have been, I don't remember what wrestling it was, but we had moved to Washington then. Mm-hmm. And at that time, being in a split market, we got Crockett, and we got, you know, all the Crockett shows, all the WWF shows, and then as throughout the 80s, syndicated programming, cable, everything, I basically had a chance to see almost everything. And it
lucky,
started
lucky.
Wrestling love with me, and yeah, I mean, I've been blessed in that I really got a chance to see everything, and whatever I couldn't find, I would buy. I bought every magazine, tapes, and I just became entrenched in love with wrestling. The guys that are starting today, they came with WCW and WWF during the Attitude Era. They seem to, those guys kind of go back to that. You know, they say they watch tapes. They say they talk to you guys, and they sit and they learn. And but then it doesn't seem to translate with some guys, you know, and going out there and then listening to what they were taught by you guys, or listening, you know, what you had told them, or, you know, what they had done in practice, or what they had watched in these classic matches that they said they did. What do you think the disconnect
Let me interject something before it slips my feeble mind, then Bob can jump on board. It's because of peer pressure, Mike, because it's not cool to do what we do.
Right.
It's cooler to go 100 miles an hour, do 50,000 dives, and make no sense. And we wouldn't want our buddies to think we actually knew how to work.
Is it like the WWE thing where it's like guys don't say what they want because it's about, I mean, I don't understand why when all of this is given to them, I mean, guys have an opportunity now to, well, the fact that I'm able to talk to you guys is one thing.
Right.
The fact that guys who aren't, they weren't lifelong wrestling fans, they weren't amateur wrestlers, they weren't football players, are in now. And I just think they tend to, would seemingly be the most impressionable people. They act that way, but yet they don't translate it. I can't believe that. I'm really stunned that it's peer pressure. I just figured it was age or a mental block or their own ego or something. And that's a frustrating thing then.
They're entertaining one another. They're not concerned with a paying customer.
Well, and the thing is, too, it's like when you're that young, I know I didn't listen to anybody. And that's, I might have heard the message, but I didn't necessarily listen and take it to heart until later. It was Kill Kowalski and then the rest of the wrestling world in New England. And we were lucky if we got one show every 6 weeks. So, I mean, we were struggling just to even get matches and just get a workout in. So we were basically working out with each other. So they were really, but we didn't have the options that the guys have now. See, I think the training has improved tenfold as far as having decent trainers around. Les may disagree.
I'm just taking your money.
Let me continue my point, just because I think you'll agree with this. Like, there wasn't a Les Thatcher's training school. There wasn't a Bob Evans to slap you in the back of the head and say, you know, son, you're doing it all wrong. They might have been guys to work with you back then, but there was no one really to train with you. So I think if you can get to a good school where they can teach you a good basic foundation, that's great. But you're still going to have to – a lot of it is going to have to be watching tapes. But the thing is, you have to watch tapes. The way I tell the guys to watch tapes is when you're in the business, try not to watch tapes as a fan anymore. There's nothing wrong with watching things as a fan, don't get me wrong. But watch it like it's two older guys in the wrestling business that you know, and they're having a match to teach you something. Even if you don't know what you're looking for, just have that spirit of looking at it as a student rather than as a fan. And I think your perception will change. I think the guys are trying sometimes, but I think what happens is they try having 2 or 3 minutes of wrestling in the beginning of their match, and the place doesn't go crazy and leave their feet and people tossing babies in the air. They're not screaming and yelling because that's not what you do when you're just setting a foundation. So I think the guys get antsy and gun-shy, and they don't want to do it again. But the way I look at it is, you know, the third pitch of a baseball game, if it's ball two and it's 2-1, we're not screaming, cheering, and acting like fools if it's a ground ball to shortstop. It's just a play that happens in a game, but it sets the stage for something else. So we have to look at the chain wrestling as a piece of the package that helps build to the spots that make you spectacular. Obviously, if a guy does a 450, do the 450. But when you do that 450, I want it to mean everything in the match. I want the people to be ready for it. I want you to nail me with it. I want you to pin me with it. And I want the people to blow the roof off the building. But if you do it and you've already done 9 things just as good as that, you've already done a 370 and a 420 and a 180, and they're all just as good as the 450, then what is the 450 anymore?
Yeah.
You know? So
exactly.
That's my whole thing, you know?
Years ago, like in the Carolinas, Johnny Weaver hooked a sleeper. People started putting their coats on. He knew it was time to go home.
The Weaver lock.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's a lot to be said about that. There really is. That's, you know, and the kids are looking for the cheap pop. And you
right.
know, there was years and years ago, even before I was born, there was a president who made a speech and the audience didn't verbally react. And that president thought he'd laid an egg. And that president was Abraham Lincoln. And that speech was a Gettysburg Address. That's
wow.
true. You know, Lincoln thought he had
laid
an egg because they were so entrenched in what he was saying, they weren't cheering and screaming and you're right, Bob. They're looking for, you know, but what, you know how sarcastic. I tell you, you want a cheap pop, drop your pants. You know?
Sure, absolutely.
Nobody's going to buy a ticket to come back and see you do it again.
Well, if I did that, they'd probably pick up their coats and get ready to go home. But that's you know, like the Johnny Weaver sleeper.
But it would be a reaction, right?
I mean, that's true. But actually, the Gettysburg Address is a perfect example of less is more, because it's actually quite a short speech if you look at it on paper.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so
yeah,
there you
true.
Go. There you go.
You're right. They're waiting. If the people aren't jumping up and spitting and screaming, then.
Right.
Or, you know, the other thing, and Bob, I know you've seen this so much too, you know, promoting and working the indies so much. Some of these kids, they may start to wrestle, and then some idiot in the back who's read too many sheets or been on too many websites is boring, and right away they think, okay, we got to get up and start, you know. And they're letting – my question to those kids is that guy the booker?
Right.
No, he just bought a ticket. Well, then, you know, and that's the other thing too. Our mentality, you know, like Terry and I talking last week, we go in the ring, this is my house, and I'm running the show.
Absolutely.
Right, you'll stand up when I want you up, and you'll sit your ass down when I want you down. Now, some, you know, years ago, like if Terry were and I were both baby faces, and we were working a scientific match or a baby face match, some
sure.
idiot there is going to say, "When are you going to wrestle?" Because the
yep.
him wrestling was kicking and punching each other.
Right,
but
right.
you don't pay any attention. You're building. You're writing a book. You're building a story. You know where you're going. And listen, asshole, shut up. I'm going to take you with me, okay? And when we get to the, you know, I had a, when I first started working with kids around here, I had a guy come to me one time and said, you know, I've noticed something. I said, what's that? He said, no matter how we screw up in the middle of a match, if we can do the finish the way you lay it out, we get what we need out of it. I said, congratulations. That really works.
When you guys get a chance, and I know you're both very busy, but or the listeners back at home, watch Les Thornton, who's one of my favorite wrestlers, Les Thornton versus Scotty McGee from the early days of WWF going national. I think it was very early 1985, or maybe the middle of 1985. And there's two matches. There's one from Madison Square Garden that I've seen, and there's one from Boston Garden. And they're both great matches. The crowd is booing them out of the building. But listen to Gorilla Monsoon and the respect and the fun he's having watching the match. He loves the match. He's going crazy for it. But they're booing him out of the building, and I'm laughing because I'm like, you people don't even realize what you're seeing. You know,
right.
And it was a great match. And like I said, Monsoon's, for lack of a better term, is marking out for the whole thing. He loves it. And I get a kick out of that because, you know, the wrestling people are loving it, and the paying customers are booing them out of the building, but they just don't know what they're seeing, you know?
Hey,
right?
Bob, I got an idea. Because we're going to have to go to break here, but we were going to come back with old school. Would you want to hold on and actually think of an old school topic?
Sure.
To throw
are you calling
there,
Bob
Lesnar?
Old? Is that what you're saying, Semper Vizi, that Bob Evans is old? Is that...
That's why I go on here with you, Les. That's why I go on here with you, Les.
Listen, when I'm on the show,
so.
By God, nobody's old except me.
Because you keep everybody young.
Well, I think good, because God, I love having you on, Bob.
At least you don't have to talk.
Before we go to break,
I want
to say something about
it.
Mike Bennett, too, about, like, you know, shut up and take him for a ride. One thing I loved about Mike Bennett's first appearance in it, you know, after Jim Cornette he had the little video introducing you guys, and you talking about your old school training, and Bennett coming in, you know, with bigger eyes, you know, on a bigger prize. The fact that people hated him so much in Ring of Honor, and the fact that people worked themselves into such a frenzy on the internet and some of the fan base there, they didn't even realize that they're just right in Mike Bennett's hands. And
hey, anyone that can turn 2,000 people can turn Maria Kanellis from a good guy to a bad guy in 9 seconds has to be doing something right.
I'm going to throw it to break here because, again, Rich is going to kill me and yell at me during this commercial break. But we'll be right back on Ringside Wrap.
In Cowboy Town.
Hey, y'all, I'm Kixbrook.
I'm Ronnie Dunn.
And we're Brooke.
And Dunn for Rad. And I've got a 4-letter word for you. Don't. As in don't drive drunk.
And I got a 3-letter word for you as in get. Get the keys.
When you see someone who's about to drive under the influence.
Get the keys.
Because friends don't let friends
drive
drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Fairy residents, this is Tooth speaking. I'm sorry, did you say credit? Credit Fairy? Perhaps you have the wrong number. Actually, no, I'm not familiar with the Credit Fairy. And I know all the fairies. We're a tight-knit bunch. Why don't you tell me more about what the Credit Fairy does? Maybe it'll ring a bell. The Credit Fairy magically raises your credit score so you'll be more likely to receive better interest rates? I'm pretty sure there's not a Credit Fairy. But I do know you can improve your credit rating by paying bills on time and keeping your credit card balances low. Glad I could help. Me? Well, I leave money under children's pillows. Adults? No, kids only. But I do know a good dentist.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Williams. There's so many things kids have to be good at these days. It's hard to stop and think about how something like learning music can help them in the future. Music helps kids because it's a performing art, and children need to learn to perform well so they can succeed in society. Getting an 85% on a math test is pretty good, but hitting 85% of the right notes during a concert isn't good enough for most music students or their teachers. A special kind of practice and preparation goes into the discipline of performing music, and it helps kids develop habits that will allow them to perform better in all areas of their lives.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling
at the Academy Theater in Avondale State.
We're also at the Masquerade every month or so.
Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling.
And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
In 1977, an 8-year-old boy picked up the game of golf from his father. The odds of that same boy winning the U.S. Open twice, 1 in 1.2 billion. The odds of him having a child diagnosed with autism, 1 in 110. Ernie Els encourages you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Rap. Mike Sempervivi alongside Les Thatcher and our unofficial, official co-host on this show. And again, great utility player extraordinaire, Brutal Bob Evans on. And I, you know, we're going to talk more. You know, I know we've been missing out on the MMA the last 2 weeks here, but the UFC on Fox coming up this Saturday night, the second show taking place on Fox, so a lot of eyeballs on this. Rashad Evans, Phil Davis, and Chael Sonnen and Michael Bisping. We'll be talking a little bit more MMA next week, but that's the biggest thing coming up this weekend on Fox. And unlike the first Lesnar Velasquez Dos Santos show, this one's actually going to be a full night coming up this Saturday night, and we'll get into that more next week. But here's my, you know, I think one of my problems with this show and why I'm always a better co-host, like alongside Brian Alvarez, is, you know, talking about today's wrestling can be incredibly painful at times, and you know, you want to try to say somewhat positive and get it out, but, you know, I always have a chance when somebody else is hosting to kind of clean some of the bile out of my mouth before I talk about a subject. And one of my problems with this show is I always just want to rush to talking to Les about, well, old school things, because, well, that's my old school soul. And Bob, I didn't actually say, you know, when I was saying come up with a topic for old school, you know, we should point out that we're thinking more along the lines of pre-1985 or so. So if your old school memory is Kimono Wamalea dancing on top of the ECW arena or bouncing around on a trampoline in WCW, we can't do that. And actually, that reminds me of something. Thank God that they had never turned to...
That may not be my old school memory, but it's a hell of a memory.
Sure.
Hey, I have concern, you know, on turning on Raw, and I might see Dolph Ziggler and Jack Swagger as the new Varsity Club with Vicky bouncing on top of a trampoline, which thank God they have not come up with that one yet. But
come on, Vicky's hot now. You're crazy.
Hey, look, Vicky looks good. Believe me, I'm not trying to say that. I just don't want to see her bouncing on a trampoline.
Well, actually, I was watching Kimono Wanalea while I was bouncing on a trampoline at WCW. So I have a crazy trivia, old school trivia thing that I've been meaning to get out because he's such a nice guy. One of the guys that helped break me in, he was an old Kowalski student. His name was John Callahan. And John was actually part of Roddy Piper's first match in WWF when he came back in 1984. So John was actually his first victim in a squash on All-Star Wrestling with Vince McMahon. So, and I always wanted to get that out to John on some sort of a national thing because he's such a nice guy. So a little piece of history. So,
cool.
But, you know, you remember Piper. They didn't want to use him as a wrestler. They wanted to use him as a manager. You know?
Yeah.
But you know what? I'll tell you a quick Piper thing. When I was helping run Knoxville Southeastern with Fuller, Leo was booking L.A., Garibaldi, and he called me, and he said, I got a kid I want to move. He said, he's done a hell of a job for me, but, you know, he needs to get out of here for a while. He said, now, he's not a great worker, but he's a hell of a talker, and he said, I was wondering if you guys could use him, and that was Piper. And we didn't, although I wish we had it, but at the time we had a list of guys waiting to come in the territory, and
right.
we were full up. We had Orton Jr. and Ken Lucas and Kevin Sullivan and Bob Roop and Boris Malenko and Christ, we had a hell of a crew as it was, you know, so we never got a chance to use him. But that was Leo, you know, at the time he was just actually, you know, getting his feet under him as a worker, but Leo was making money with him off his mouth more than off his in-ring talent.
Well, supposedly Piper's version of the story, and by the way, not a nicer guy in the business. I mean, as far as meeting one of your heroes and not being disappointed, I'll tell you, people can learn a lot from Roddy Piper as far as how you treat people. I mean, shook my hand, looked me in the eye, asked me how my family was, asked me what I did for a living. I mean, took 3 or 4 minutes and just made me feel like the number one guy in the world. So that's just something aside from him. So, Roddy, if you ever hear this, you made a difference to me about how I treat people. So, not a
You're
nice
right.
guy. And I know Brian's had some trouble with him, but I know Roddy was probably had a little food poisoning that day. So that happens. But
you know what I saw too, Bob, with that, talking about a gentleman. When they were out on the bus doing the Piper book tour,
yep.
Closest they got to here was Columbus, and they
yep.
called and said, "Why don't you come up to Columbus and have dinner with us before Roddy
right.
does the signing?" So
yep.
anyway, I went up and we had dinner and everything, and said, "You're going to stay and for the signing?" And I said, "Yeah, okay. You know, we'll stay around for a while." And one of the guys that was a manager for my company, Brock Guffman, had gone with me. And anyway. The amazing thing, I sat behind, behind Roddy, who was behind the table doing the autograph thing. This whole lot, I don't know how many people were there, you know, a couple hundred probably.
Mm.
But every woman that came to that table, Roddy stood up and took his cap off and said hello to her. Every female.
Wow.
Yeah. And I thought, you know, I said to Brock, I said, how many people do you think would do that? I mean, just show that kind of respect.
Right. One.
Yeah, being a gentleman, a lost art, you know. It, take it back to wrestling for a minute. You know, when Piper, my father was big in wrestling. He would point out things that some of you amateur wrestled, and he would point out things where, you know, it was show. But I've said it on this show. Guys like Bruiser Brody, there were just some guys that just I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And Piper and Valentine in
yep.
83. I, in the magazines, watching the angle, the whole thing with a dog collar, I actually thought, and blading his ear, I mean, Matt, I just watching the blood pour, I actually thought Roddy Piper was deaf. I actually believed, I was like, I just couldn't believe it. It's like, well, that has to be real. You know,
right.
I got sucked in. It had to be real. And I remember when Valentine, because he stuck around in Mid-Atlantic for a little bit and dropped the U.S. title to Slayer, I think it was. It was that Dory and Gary Hart and Ernie Ladd were booking, and Valentine left. Piper was already gone. In Piper's pit, where it was, you know, Piper was a bad guy now, and Valentine was there, and it was like, oh, what is going to happen? And it
yeah.
was just, you know, my mind was blown, and it just, I couldn't for, like, a week after that, you know, just at school, and just saying, I could not believe that they had hugged, and I just, that getting sucked up into that emotion reminded me of you know, talking about him starting off in WWF, because it just, even now, I can remember sitting there, Indian style, in front of the TV watching that, and it just, it blew my mind. It absolutely blew my mind.
Well, he's just, I mean, as far as making, you know, and Les has said it a bunch of different ways, and so has Bill Watts and some of the other guys that I really look up to. It's, you know, just because everybody else's match on the show looks fake doesn't mean mine has to. Or just because someone else's, you know, just because they think the wrestling business is fake doesn't mean that my business has to be fake. You know, and it's all perception. You know, I always prided myself on the heel that even the heel fans didn't like. You know, just because you could get a reaction out of them. And it's not a reaction like, I hate America and whatever the, you know, if I'm in Boston, the Red Sox suck and the Yankees are awesome. Like, that, you know, not that kind of reaction. Like, you know, a true reaction. Like, the babyface is coming back and they buy the babyface coming back. Or, and I'm a deceptively big person. Like, I hunch down when I'm with Mike because I'm actually a little bit taller than Mike. But when I have my boots on, I'm close to 6'5", and I'm about 250 right now. I'm trimming down, but I've gotten as high as 280. So if I stand real tall and be real imposing, then I usually end up working with smaller guys. So they have to chop me down. They have to struggle. They have to fight from underneath, and they have to overcome. But if we don't know how to do that, then it's hard, you know. And usually I'm working, like a lot of the guys around here are younger, good-looking guys. So I have to be extra old and extra ugly, you know, to make it happen. Ugly in appearance and ugly in style, you know, and I have to be mean because then the good-looking guy is going to whip my ass and hopefully win the match, that type of thing, you know. And I just, there's so much credibility, and it wasn't even everything's a shoot and we all do a bunch of amateur stuff. It's just the way somebody looked. It's just the way somebody, like you said, Bruiser Brody or, you know, even like a Paul Orndorff, you know, who just looked, everything he did just looked good. You know, Bob Orton Jr., Les, you mentioned him. He's probably one of my favorite underrated guys in the WWF. Every single match you watch on a lot of those early house shows, Bob Orton did differently. Bob Orton tried to do something different every single night, which I admire, you know. Did it always look fantastic? No, but he always tried to do something a little bit different. And he always got good matches out of guys that shouldn't have even been shining his shoes, you know. And I just think that part is missing. There's just not a lot of those guys, you know, the big, you know, not necessarily big, but just the ugly heels who put heat on people who, you know, lose and then the guy overcomes something. That's what we all loved about wrestling. Somebody has to overcome something to get to something else. You know, that's what most movies are about. There's no drama. There's no struggle. Even in comedies, there's a struggle. You know, in Hangover, they have to figure out what crazy things happened to them the night before. You know, you have to overcome something to get to another point. And now it's just everybody's kind of running on the same track and they're all about the same. And, you know, yeah, there's differences, but they're about the same, you know.
Well, you know, I think, Bob, too, it's like watching two guys volley a tennis ball across the net. It's not
right.
You do a spot, I'll do a spot. You do a spot, I'll do a spot.
Yep.
But a baby face, as you know, I worked, with the exception of a couple months, all my life as a baby face. Were my comebacks good? Only if I sold. You know, if I never went away, I couldn't come back.
Yeah, exactly. You had to, and that's one of the things I had to learn when I did a couple of babyface runs down here just with some of the guys, and I swear, you have to have a lot of patience. Like, I think I'm getting beaten up too much, and then I was told, just when you think you've been beaten up too much, get beaten up some more, you know, so... You know, with your little comebacks and stuff. But that was the toughest thing for me, was to just, because I'm usually used to being the heel and dominating the match, at least the good chunk of it. Now all of a sudden I have to be in a position where I'm on defense a lot of the match, and that was different for me. But I definitely understand what you're saying. You know, you we're all built, and that's another thing too. I don't think, and this is not a Ring of Honor or WWE or TNA thing. I think the general overview of the business now is, I'm going to get my, you know, like you say, Les, get your shit in, but I'm going to get my things in my match. I'm going to steal the show. I'm going to do what I want to do, and that's it, when that's not necessarily your job on the show. You know,
right,
the Rock,
exactly.
Rock had a lot of truth when he said, know your role and shut your mouth. You know, everybody has to have a spot on the show. It's like an ensemble. Actually, I heard it in one of the PSAs you guys just played. They were telling about kids learning how to play music. You know, everybody has to do their part to make beautiful music. Well, I think a wrestling show is like that too. Everybody does have to do their part to make a good show. You know, and Les's idea and my idea of somebody having a good match might be the most boring thing for people who don't know wrestling are watching. But if the guy did his job and did a good job and they told the story that we want him to tell and the younger guy learned and the older guy taught, then isn't that what we want to see? You know, the main event, as long as the main event delivered, as long as the tag match was solid, you know, those are the things that make a good show. And I just think a lot of that is being lost because everybody's like, I'm just going to do as much as I can and be spectacular and dunk the basketball every time instead of learning a full court press or, you know, learning an outside shot.
Sure, yeah. Well, you know, that's the other thing, too, is now, of course, everybody now is smarter than the wrestlers anyway.
Of course.
And, you know, but that was one of the things, too, you know, years ago, the heel would lead in the match. He was watching the crowd, listening to the crowd while you guys were, you know, while you're selling. And when he saw them starting to rumble and, you know, he'd take it, he'd want to take it to just on the verge of a riot. I mean, legitimately,
yeah.
You know, to where the fans are, you know, maybe getting ready to come in the ring. In fact, I've been in a few of those too, but, you know, and then you fire up and make your comeback. Jerry Briscoe was telling a story a couple years ago at the Charlotte Legends Convention about the first time he'd ever worked with Johnny Valentine. And he said Valentine's working him over and said, sell this kid and sell, you know, sell. And Jerry said, hell, we're 10 minutes in. And I'm thinking, now? Not now, kid. 15
now.
Minutes in? Not now, kid. 20 minutes in? Not now, kid. And you know, but Valentine was an artist, you know,
right.
That. And Jerry said, then when he, I thought, my God, I'm not going to, you know, get a comeback. And when he said, Johnny said, now, kid. And when he said, when he fired up, the friggin' building exploded, you know.
Funny how those guys knew what they were, kind of knew what they were talking about.
Yeah.
Well, guys, we've actually gotten towards the end here, actually reached the end here. So got to get the plugs in here real quick. Obviously, for all the news going on, especially on the Georgia scene as far as keeping up with all the shows and some of the events that are happening. But overall, what's happening in the world of professional wrestling and mixed martial arts, too, to go to GWHnews.com. Obviously, the moneymaker, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for all your old school needs. And speaking of old school and old school free-for-all tomorrow night on Peach State Pandemonium with Bobby Simmons, Jerry Oates, and Mike Norris. So get a chance to listen in there. And, Bob, I got to, you know, hey, thank you very much for being on today, that you've been for being on for so long.
Oh,
again,
sure.
You're a Jose Oquendo. You are you're our fifth Beatle. You really are. And I don't know who the fourth Beatle is, but you're the fifth.
He's the Karma Sutra, damn it.
That's, he pulls out the Jose Oquendo line. My goodness, I'm impressed.
Hey, Bob, I'll see you on the 17th of February here in Cincinnati.
I will see if I will be there. I'm not sure yet. So I probably not, because we have to put on the illusion that we're still the same person. So,
okay. Well, you tell that damn cornet if you're not here, I'm shutting the building down.
Uh-oh. just real quick, guys, at Brutal Bob Evans on Twitter, hashtag Why Not Bob. You know, I'm like I said, I'm not trying to beat anybody's doors down, but if you want to see what I can do, or if you think I'm wrong and you want to shut my mouth, the only way to do that is to see me live and in person and see me fall flat on my face, which I'm not going to do, but hey, there's always a shot. So if you can, and Facebook, of course, Brutal Bob Evans, and that's about it really for plugs for me, Mike. I mean, you got all kinds of stuff going on, and by the way, just from another guy who's been around a long enough time, Les Thatcher is a hell of a trainer and has mentored probably about as many people in the business as anyone I can think of right now. And you want to hear him usually when the teacher tells you that it's important, they repeat it a bunch of times on the test. That's why Les feels like he has to repeat himself, because it's important. So if you think he's going on and on, then learn the lesson and maybe you won't talk as much.
God,
you know,
bless
what?
You, Bob. I'll get the check in the mail to you in the morning for that.
Oh, good. $1.50 I didn't have before.
You know, I wanted to say I'm gonna be in Mobile for the Gulf Coast reunion on March 2nd and 3rd. And I also found out as of Sunday, it's a combination pleasure and business trip. I'll be at CAC on April 16, 17, and 18 in Vegas. So
nice.
Yeah, And then tomorrow, Mike Johnson and I are recording the Wrestler's Eye Radio on Insider. And then Saturday, Vic Stosha and Will Strauss and I will be doing the Observer. And then, of course, with bated breath, I will turn on Mike Sempervisi and Brian Alvarez on Sunday night.
I couldn't do any better myself. With 10 seconds left to go, everyone, we will talk to you next week.
Bob, I love you, buddy. Take care.
Love you, Les. Take care, guys.
All right, Les. All right, Bob. Thanks, man.
No problem. Bye.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.